and new NFC North. This might be what we're looking at going forward. We'll talk about that and some other observations NFL-wise on this 11th of September lunchtime on the East Coast. This is the Todd Wright Toddcast, presented by Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. If you have a legal need, please reach out to them for a free consult, either at 813-902-3576 or click the box to request a free consultation at BrandonLegalGroup.com. Full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. Brandon Legal Group will also have a foursome and is a partner in Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments. The beginning of our Todd Wright Tour Golf season is a little over 4 weeks away. Already sold out at Plantation Palms Golf Club in Land O'Lakes on October 11th. If you'd like to play Plantation Palms Golf Club, you can go to their website, plantationpalms.net, for tee times any other day except October 11th. You might be able to book an afternoon tee time October 11th, but those morning tee times belong to the Todd Wright Tour. But remember, they have a lighted driving range. They have a wonderful upgraded mini golf with lights and a terrific sound system, as well as fine food, beverage, and service in Mulligan's Pub, which hosts trivia every week and does have the NFL Sunday ticket. That's Plantation Palms Golf Club in Land O'Lakes. They're at plantationpalms.net. Thank you for allowing me to talk about those who pay for the podcast so you don't have to. My email is write.todd@yahoo.com, write.todd@yahoo.com. Not sure if this will post before the Thursday night game to start week two. Good one. Washington, Green Bay. But let me just hit on a few things here that I don't think I've touched on either here in the Todd Wright Toddcast or football-wise in the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, based on what we're seeing, based on what we're hearing. I say the new NFC North because many of you know how I feel about Detroit not winning the division this year, and that was prior to their week one loss, bad loss, at the Green Bay Packers. So I won't spend a lot of time. You know what I question about the Lions, and you kind of saw it play out in week one. What I like about Green Bay and Minnesota are their overall talent level. I think we all agree Detroit has had a very high talent level. It's probably not as high as it's been the last couple years because eventually the salary cap does get you. Talked about two interior offensive linemen are gone. One retired, one left via free agency. Green Bay has had the youngest roster in the NFL the last 2 years and been a competent team. So that team grows from within. They do use a first-round draft pick on a wide receiver. Granted, he didn't have a high snap count. Romeo Dobbs got more than Matthew Golden in week one, something just worth monitoring. They add Micah Parsons. Minnesota added two interior defensive linemen in free agency that had a big impact on their week one win and keeping them in the game enough to come from behind and win in Ben Johnson's debut as Bears head coach with Caleb Williams in year two. The Vikings put roughly about $90 million, haven't looked at the actual contracts, but they put a significant amount of money in two new defensive tackles who were a factor in week one. Much was talked about with the Bears upgrading their offensive line, what the Bears spent to upgrade their talent level. one offensive lineman in particular, a guard coming off a really bad year. Most seem to want to write that off as the team's problem or not a problem. I don't. I think the player is the problem, and that was a bad investment. But Minnesota's investment in two new defensive tackles for a Brian Flores defense that already has the respect and attention of many in the NFL. Clearly worked to Minnesota's advantage in staying in the game and then winning the game while J.J. McCarthy gets most of the attention and the credit. So I think we saw a small sample through 1 week why Green Bay and Minnesota are more likely to win the NFC North than Detroit, which has lost its last two playoff games, lost two interior offensive linemen, lost both coordinators, and Detroit may have missed their window of opportunity to do big things over the last 2 years. It may be the Packers and Vikings' time. Staying with the Bears very quickly. Yeah, here's this note. I got to X these things off as I talk about them. It's my understanding last year wasn't a good first year for Caleb Williams. Granted, they didn't get him at the beginning, anyone to work with him that was quality. Then a change was made mid-season. It wasn't like Eberflus was already in trouble. Eberflus wasn't going to work with him. He's a defensive guy, and Eberflus is at his best when he's simply calling defensive plays, which he's doing in Dallas. And notice they were in that game against the Eagles, even without Micah Parsons and injuries at the cornerback position. That's what Eberflus does well. But he wasn't going to help Caleb. So Caleb was under, as I understand it, kind of a mandate last year. I remember watching him get the snot beat out of him in a primetime game at Houston. And I thought it was odd. And I guess one of the things Caleb was told last year was, don't run. Don't run. So you're taking that element away from him. And were you trying to make him a pure pocket passer, or what was going on there? That even if he sees open field in front of him to get a first down, they didn't want him doing it. They're all gone now. They're not part of Caleb's life. So Caleb was allowed to advance the ball, or at least look like he would advance the ball and move around to or beyond the line of scrimmage. It didn't look right, did it? It looked awkward. He's sort of loose with the football. Perhaps this is why the previous coaching staff said to Caleb, yeah, don't do that, because it's not a strength of yours. Look, if Caleb doesn't succeed under Ben Johnson, Ben Johnson's going to get the benefit of the doubt, not Caleb Williams. This doesn't often happen where you draft a franchise quarterback number one overall. You basically you admit a mistake in Justin Fields pretty quick, who had a good week one on now his third team, even in a loss. The finger here will be pointed at Williams, not at Ben Johnson. If this doesn't work, it will be Johnson who stays and Williams who goes. And it kind of plays to the Bears' narrative of they've never really had a big-time franchise quarterback. Even the 85 Bears, it was Jim McMahon, right? It was more for the intangibles and the toughness and the leadership than it was for Jim McMahon moves the chains. Jim McMahon can make the big throws. I like Jim McMahon. But when you name the best players, not the biggest personalities, the best players on the 85 Bears, does McMahon's name even come up in the first 10? And he's a quarterback. So the Bears, you know, never had a 4,000-yard passer. I just didn't like how Caleb couldn't finish that game and just how bad he was. The last number one quarterback who looked that awkward, kind of moving and running, where it's like Elaine dancing in Seinfeld, was Jameis Winston. That's the last quarterback that looked like that. And we know Jameis was pretty loose with the football. Let's talk about another young quarterback who you may already be waiting for him in fantasy. His team that drafted him is saying, what are we waiting for? Connor Rogers of the Matthew Berry Fantasy Football Happy Hour on Peacock is a New York-based football analyst and personality, and he's good. He also looks at a lot of film. He has a unique perspective that I like to hear. And I like when Matthew turns to Jay Retcher on his show for handicapping and analytics, and he turns to Connor for some scouting stuff. Well done by Matthew. You got good people with you, and you're using them how they should be utilized. Rogers brought up this point on Jackson Dart. So this is for those of you who say, boy, the Giants stunk week one. If they flop against the Cowboys, which they've done, what, 15 of the last 16 times. I love how ignorant the Giants fans are when they build up, this is the time we're going to beat the Cowboys, and then they lose, and they're like, I don't want to hear it. Yeah, fuck you. Hammer nail. This isn't a rivalry these days. And the Cowboys have had some teams over these last 8 years, including this one. The Cowboys are the hammer and the Giants are the nail. And week two may go that way. And Giants fans are just going to point the finger at Russell Wilson and say, what are we doing here? Why are we playing him? You have Jackson Dart. Connor's theory may have a lot of merit. This offensive line is so questionable right now, and it isn't even at full strength. Look, it's not like Tracy had any room to run last week either. That Dart is in bubble wrap. He's not only in bubble wrap playing, they're not letting him talk to the media, which is technically an NFL violation. When all players are supposed to be available to the media, the Giants haven't let Jackson Dart talk. So is there a scenario where I'll just make a prediction? Granted, Russell's really durable. It wasn't until late in his career in Seattle he didn't play games. And then did he get hurt in Denver? But let's say there's a scenario where Russell – I mean, would they put Jameis in before Dart at this point, just because Dart's in bubble wrap, he's the future, let's not get him killed, it's not worth it? Is that also the crutch for this general manager and this coach? So they can say to ownership, well, we haven't used our franchise quarterback yet, so keep us on the job. We're protecting him. It's all part of the plan.
Yeah.
That may be a reason we're not seeing Jackson Dart and why he's in bubble wrap and why he can't talk to the media either. Brock Purdy not going to play for multiple weeks. So the Niners come into the beginning of the season forced to make Ricky Pearsall wide receiver one, and what else do they have at that position? Then, in a win, in a game they won against Seattle, we'll get to them, they lose Kittle, Trent Williams didn't win his matchup on the offensive line. They fire their kicker. First, Kyle Shanahan was defending him in the postgame presser and then came back and basically said, scratch that. Yeah, the kicker's accountable. And Jake Moody's now gone. And now Brock Purdy isn't going to play for multiple weeks. Kyle Shanahan wanted Mac Jones in the draft and finally gets him in free agency. So this intrigues me because Kyle believes in Mac Jones, kind of the way McVay believes in Jimmy G. You know, a lot of coaches remember Mike Holmgren and Seneca Wallace. And I even was on the phone recently with Seneca Wallace, and he brought up his relationship with Coach Holmgren. Seneca told me, said, you know, Mike Holmgren wanted robot QBs. Here's what you do. You do it this way. So Seneca did it his way and had a job. Worked out for Seneca. There aren't as many robot QBs out there anymore. That was another point Seneca made to me. But the Niners going to Mac Jones, who, you know, across the board of backup quarterbacks is probably, I'm going to say, one of the five or six best out there as a backup quarterback. I know he didn't work in New England. He got Brian Thomas the ball a lot in Jacksonville. And now Kyle gets to use him as a number one in San Francisco. Amidst talk that despite the workload for McCaffrey, McCaffrey didn't have any explosive plays. There's just a lot going on here. Could we get to the point with the Niners where there's some arch madness talk about could they be a candidate next year to position themselves via trading draft picks and a place the Manning family would be comfortable having Arch because of the history of the organization? Could it get to that point? And would Kyle Shanahan be involved or not? Would the window of Link Shanahan, or have we gotten to the point, as I keep bringing up, I think Lynch and Shanahan aren't enjoying working together as much as they used to. And in the end, Lynch isn't going anywhere. If someone's got to go, I think it'll be Kyle. And Lynch continues to run the team. But I don't think Kyle was ever on board with the Trey Lance thing. Kyle may not have been on board with the Jake Moody move and went along with it. There may have been others. So keep an eye on everything happening with San Francisco. Even though they won in week one, edges to the Rams right now in the battle for the NFC West. And as far as Seattle, and I just don't think they have the talent yet in Mike McDonald year two and Clint Kubiak year one. They'll win some games. They'll win some games because they keep them low scoring and because Darnold plays well, throws to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I've said all along I think Charbonnet is a better player than Ken Walker, but I didn't expect Charbonnet to get so much use in week one. He was in the second possession, and Walker was on the bench. Now, it's one game, it's worth monitoring, and I came around last year that the Rams moved on from Cooper Kupp because they basically looked at how Cooper Kupp didn't – he had reached that point where he couldn't separate anymore from defenders. You can work as hard as you want. This reminds me of how Jalen Smith, off multiple injuries and eventually was a factor for the Cowboys, how Jalen Smith just fell off a cliff in terms of what happened there, and the Cowboys moved on from Jalen Smith. Cooper Kupp didn't look the part of an impact player in week one against the Niners. So I think the Seahawks are going to be competitive, but this year I think there's a lot of evaluation going on. And another offseason of draft picks, free agency, they need some offensive line help. Is Charbonnet someone who they can count on as an RB1 going forward? Then who are you getting to complement JSN? Things like that. Maybe adding a big-time impact defensive player. I'm not saying another Micah Parsons is out there, but a move like that in 2026, and then they're actually ready to compete for the division title. I did an entire podcast after the Bills lost the AFC title game with the game on their racket, needing what? 3 to tie, a touchdown to win, with plenty of time, plenty of time stoppages, and how they ran 6 plays before they turned the ball over on downs and the Chiefs go to the Super Bowl. They ran 6 plays, and on those 6 plays, their best offensive player, not named Josh Allen, never touched the ball in any of the 6 plays and was only on the field for 3 of them. This after James Cook in the game, in the AFC title game, prior to that final possession for the Bills, touched the ball 16 times for 134 yards, a terrific second effort touchdown, so he was averaging over 8 yards per touch. They're not changing. They're not changing a damn thing. As the Bills successfully came from behind against the Ravens, nobody blows double-digit leads since 2020 like Harbaugh, Lamar, and the Ravens. What did Lamar say about the last 3 and out? Yeah, I had a cramp. Are you kidding? And I put some of this on Harbaugh too, because he deserves it. 4 playoff wins since winning a Super Bowl 13 years ago now. Time to start holding him accountable. Cook's percentage of offensive snaps seems capped at 60%. I learned that as owning him as in fantasy, what, last year or the year before. There are just some times where you're going to look out there and he ain't playing. And that is in 2-minute offense and in general, when the Bills kind of spread things out and seem more comfortable with other guys in that spread formation to catch balls out of the backfield, or they don't want Cook on the field because they feel it's too much of a tell that he's going to get the ball. I think this is flawed from a scheme standpoint. I'll just ask, why doesn't James Cook play more than 60% of your offensive snaps? Is it because he's not worthy of it? Or is this offensive scheme just one of those that doesn't utilize his talents properly? You remember Lovie Smith with the Buccaneers? Well, Darrell Revis doesn't fit our scheme. Well, maybe because your scheme is fucked. Revis is in the Hall of Fame. Lovie, where are you now? Loser Lovie Smith, as I've always called him. So I just question how the Bills don't use James Cook more. They seem to have picked up where they left off. Granted, they won the game over the Ravens. They did win the game. But when they needed to win against the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl, they lost. Let's do one more. Baker Mayfield got away with a number of bad reads against Atlanta when he needed to get the Bucs down the field and in the end zone. He did it. Baker's an exciting player. But in recent years, no one throws more touchdowns than Mayfield. No one throws more picks than Mayfield. Atlanta missed on turning Mayfield's bad reads into big plays for the Falcons. I don't know that Houston will. And I've made this point on television. The last 2 years, the Texans are a better franchise than the Bucs. With a first-time head coach, also a defensive coach, and a rookie quarterback. Just about any argument you can give me on what the Bucs have done the last 2 years, I can counter it with, I'll see you that and raise you with the Texans. Well, the Bucs have won the division the last 2 years. So have the Texans. Well, the Bucs have won a playoff game in the last 2 years. The Texans have won a playoff game each of the last 2 years. The Texans have won head-to-head against the Bucs the last 2 years. Well, the Texans take advantage of a bad division. Don't be a hypocrite if you're a Bucs fan and say that about Houston, considering how shitty your division is. So this week is telling to me. Mayfield's likely to make some more bad decisions. Can he get away with them against a Texans team that's going to pressure him more than Atlanta did? And has better personnel in the secondary to take advantage of his bad throws. Granted, the Texans have issues on their offensive line. But did the Texans look that bad last week? Or was that just Shula's defense and the talent the Rams have on that defensive line just completely dominating that game and preventing Houston from getting the ball to Nico Collins and doing enough to get in the end zone in a tough opener against the Rams, a team that was very close to winning it all last year. Lost to the Eagles with the opportunity to win the game down six on the road on what, the 21-yard line, plenty of time, fresh set of downs, kind of like how the Bills blew it in the AFC title game. The Rams had that opportunity, even a better opportunity, better field position, better situation, and didn't do it against the Eagles. We'll stop there. What are your questions? What are your thoughts? Write.todd@yahoo.com, write.todd@yahoo.com. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group and Plantation Palms Golf Club. Thanks for listening.